Hello, it's me, Sam Dunnewald. I'm here before the show to tell you that I am kickstarting my first standalone in-print RPG, Band-Aids and Bullet Holes. It's a John Wick-inspired game of bloody revenge inside a tight-knit clique of professional assassins. It's a one-shot capsule game, box set, deck builder, and it's the end result of 3 years of interviews and ideation on all things game design right here on Dice Exploder. If you like the show, if you like how I think about game design, I think you're really going to love this game. I really just want you to know about it. I want you to play it. And you can follow the Kickstarter page right now at a link in the show notes. You can back the game starting May 5th. That's it. Thanks so much for listening, as always. I hope you check out the game. Here's Dice Exploder. Hello and welcome to another episode of Dice Exploder. Each week we take a tabletop mechanic and go, pss, 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 pss. Hey buddy, want to see what I got here? My name is Sam Dunnewald and my co-hosts today are B. Alexander and Barclay Travis. B, whose pronouns are he and they, and Barclay, pronouns he and it, are the hosts of Tabletop Book Club, a podcast that is exactly what it sounds like. It's a show with such fun energy and, of course, good design talk. Check it out. Try their recent episode about Starcrossed. Barclay also has a new game out as of last month. Begin Again is a time loop game set in college about feeling frozen in place while on the precipice of facing the world. It uses the belonging outside belonging engine established by Dream Askew and Dream Apart, and when I invited Barclay and B on the show, they wanted to dig into that engine. So today, we'll be talking about lures, a sort of relationship hook mechanic often present in belonging outside belonging games. The engine runs on a token economy. Get into trouble, get a token. Get out of trouble, you gotta spend a token. And each character has a lure sitting on their sheet that offers up a token as it calls out to the other players. Don't you want to get in trouble with me? We're also covering lures specifically in the context of Heaven in the Dust by Luke Jordan, a Hades Town and American Dust Bowl inspired belonging outside belonging game about best intentions on the road to ruin. We get into not just how lures work in the abstract, but also how the context of this game changes them. So let's get into it. Thanks to everyone who supports Dice Exploder on Patreon, and here are B and Barclay with lures from Heaven in the Dust. Barclay and B, thanks for being on Dice Exploder. Pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
What are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about lures in belonging outside belonging games, specifically talking about Heaven in the Dust by Luke Jordan.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about lures. I've found them such a compelling mechanic since like the first time I sat down and started playing with them, and I'm excited to dive in here. But I want to start with Heaven in the Dust specifically because, I mean, we could have picked Dream Askew, Dream Apart, the like game that lures and the belonging outside belonging system kind of originated from, but we picked this one instead. And my impression is that is in part because you love it, Barclay. But like, I don't know, like why are we doing Heaven in the Dust by Luke Jordan specifically, and what is it?
So Heaven in the Dust is a Dust Bowl set belonging outside belonging game where you play as these archetypes based off of Greek mythology. It's very heavily inspired by Hadestown, which is part of the reason that I love it. It's also because Luke is a dear friend of mine, so I'm biased, but also is an incredible game designer. And not this game, but in a game that I don't think is published yet, so I picked this one. Luke wrote about lures in a way that finally made them make sense to me. Because I really enjoy lures. I think that they're a really interesting mechanic and really useful for having players engage with each other in an interesting way. But I also kind of struggled to figure out how to implement them in my games and how to write them well.
Wait, so what are they, though? Like for someone who hasn't played one of these games before, like, what's the system at play and, like, how do lures fit into it?
Belonging Outside Belonging is a diceless game system. Each playbook has moves, strong moves that you have to spend a token to use and weak moves that you gain a token by using. So you can use weak moves to gain tokens to then use your strong moves, or other people can gain tokens by interacting with your lore, which is a prompt of every time this person interacts with you in this specific way, they get a token from doing that.
Yeah, so like generally speaking, like you get tokens for getting yourself into trouble and you spend tokens to get yourself out of trouble or to like be cool. And lures are like, come get into trouble with me, right? Like it's like an exciting, like a, it's a lure, right? Like their name.
Right. Well. Like,
but so a couple examples from Heaven in the Dust are, we've got Hades. His lure is, whenever someone places themselves in your debt or makes a deal with you, they gain one coin, which is Heaven in the Dust's version of tokens. And so when someone, is coming to you and being like, can I be in trouble and you be on the other end of that trouble? Then like they get a token that they can use to be cool later. Or Hephaestus says, whenever someone brings you a grievance or object that needs fixing, they gain one coin. And so these things like help define the flavor of the playbooks, right? But they're also, there's just this like juicy little invitation to come like do this cool recurring vignette with me.
Yeah, it's really interesting also in Heaven in the Dust is very explicitly like a game of tragedy. So you are setting up these characters to constantly be getting themselves in trouble and not really having a way out of it, which is really intriguing and really interesting from a lore's perspective, because you have all these characters that, again, are also these archetypes of Greek mythology. So they each have certain things that in this game, there's a mechanic called birthrights also. Hephaestus, for example, your birthrights are rust, dignity, revolution, and destruction. So you are also motivating this sort of token exchange by specifically focusing on those themes, depending on what your playbook is, which also is like a fun way to inform lores, I think. There's a few different versions of like lores, but hacked a little differently in this game that I think also make it a little bit more of an in-depth mechanic that's really interesting to me.
Yeah, I want to come back to that. First, I want to say, B, what do you think of lures?
I really love the lures in this game. I think that part of the reason why these lures are so strong is because these playbooks are characters that you're stepping into versus like an archetype that you're building a character around. I don't know if it makes it easier. I don't know if that's the word I mean to use, but I think it like the lures become more like targeted. Like I think that for Apollo, Prince of Liars, Prince of Light, the lore is whenever someone bears your heart to you or lets your music change them, they gain one coin. And I think that in another version of this game, there is like probably a way for the playbook to be more general and to have the same like targeted lore. But I think that, I don't know if I'm articulating this well.
The thing that I'm hearing is that I hadn't really thought of about lures before is that like they're almost like a weak move and a strong move like tied together into a relationship, right? It's like Apollo there is getting to kind of freely make a strong move of like change someone else. And then that person is getting a token for allowing Apollo to do so. And I mean, this is my favorite thing about lures as opposed to weak moves and strong moves is that they're so baked into relationships, right? And I think character is so dependent on relationships. Like their relationships are just so great and juicy and cool. And like when I'm coming in as Hades and like my lure is about debts and making deals, like that just describes so much what kind of energy and relationships I want to be bringing to my relationship to everyone else at the table, even if you're not triggering my lure, right? And like that's just true across the board. And then finding out how those things like puzzle together with each other, like interlock, like that's really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I think something that I enjoy about Belonging Outside Belonging games is the amount of, this is going to sound silly the way I'm phrasing it, but the amount of lists in each playbook is so fun because there's something very interesting to me about not necessarily a moves list, but like when you're picking features for your character or something of that nature, the choices you aren't picking inform just as much of your character as the choices you are picking, I think, because they are informing what that playbook's vibe is. And so I think, but Allure for me is one of those things where it's like, even if nobody ever triggers this, it is still informing how I am interacting with people. Obviously you want people to be triggering it, but.
Okay, Barclay, one of the very first things you said when we started talking here was like, I didn't really understand lures. And then the way Luke put them really clarified that for me. And I'm curious to hear you maybe like talk about like what didn't make sense about them at first. Like what I want to know, like what didn't make sense and then what about Luke's explanation of them did make sense.
It's not necessarily that they didn't work for me. Like it's not that I had any reaction to them that was like, I don't like these. But it's, I think, one of those things that before I got really deep into game design and picking things apart, kind of felt like an afterthought to me. Not as in people writing them felt like treated them as an afterthought, but just for me, I was always like, oh, and also lores are there. And they were interesting to me, but I didn't really understand the importance of having them and how they were informing kind of play in that way.
Before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about how you like were reading a lot of games at a certain point and like not playing as many as you wanted to. And do you think that that relates to this? Because to me, like, it's so much easier when you're just sitting down and like reading a book and like imagining what it's going to be like to forget that it's going to be practically speaking in conversation with a bunch of other fucking people.
Yeah.
Like you're going to just like when you sit down and read like the Dream Askew playbooks or the, you know, Heaven in the Dust playbooks, like it's like, look at all the juice of like who this like Hades person is going to be. Right. Or like, well, I have this character in my mind. And then like it's not until I like sit down at the table where I'm like, right. Like my Hades is going to completely change when I throw him into conflict with your Persephone or whatever. Right. Like, because lures are so based on relationships, do you feel like that was part of what was going on there?
I hadn't thought of that until just now, but absolutely, that's what it was. Because I definitely am still in a position where I don't feel like I'm playing as many games as I would like to. I very much read a lot of them, and I don't get a chance to play very often. So that definitely rings true. Again, what I really like about Belonging Outside Belonging Games is how they paint such a picture of this character. But I think even more so than other systems are very much about the relationships that you're forming and the messy relationships that you're forming, especially, which I think maybe also is a concept that I didn't really have in my brain when I was first reading them, where now I'm like, well, of course you need the lore. How else are you going to make these relationships? How else are you going to force yourself into weird little positions of vulnerability with other characters that you weren't expecting to have?
I think also my difficulty with lores, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, Barclay, here, but I know that we both primarily play games online, and there's a like tactility in Belonging Outside Belonging Games that like if you're playing online and you're referencing a PDF instead of having a physical book or sheet in front of you and you're not around other people, it makes it more difficult to remember to reference everything you have.
Yeah, I think that we've talked about this with other friends of ours also, where we've had this experience where even moves sometimes in Belonging Outside Belonging Games were like, oh, I'm just kind of doing improv with my friends right now. Like, I kind of forgot that there are other things
I'm not playing a game.
I'm doing improv.
I mean, like, I really love a game where, like, one of my favorite games is Fiasco, right? Where, like, the whole thing is, like, here's 45 minutes of procedure to get you, like, set up to then do 2 hours of improv with your friends, right? And, like, that's still right. A game, you know? Like, the setup is really key framing for getting you in there. And in the same way, I think, like, like poetry is game mechanic, right? Like when you have a book that's written as well as this one, I can like show up and be like, yeah, we're gonna improv in the world of Heaven of Dust now, or Heaven is Dust now, because yeah, like that's the thing. But that also like really hits at my big problem with lures, that like forgetting that other people have them and you should use them. Like, I've played a lot of these games online and in person, and I think you are absolutely right that like it is easier to forget about them online. But in person, I find myself forgetting about them because the sheet is all the way in front of some other person. Like, what am I reading their lures sideways? And like, you know, like the thing that I want much more is like an outward, like a lure that like I can take action to bait someone mm-hmm. else into taking, right? Like in my mind, you know, Hades lure here of whenever someone places themselves in your debt or makes a deal with you, they gain a coin. To me, like, I want that to be on Hades' sheet and like phrased as, when you offer to make a deal to someone or to put them in your debt, right? Like, when you offer like to make this happen, then you give them a coin or something, right? Like, I think they would be stronger or like used more frequently, at least, if they were in front of the right player to activate them.
I do also like reframing it as you give them a coin or you give them a token, because it makes me think about like strings and Powered by the Apocalypse games, especially because Belonging Outside Belonging is so much about like interpersonal relationships. I like it more as like something you are giving to somebody instead of like, and you're gaining this thing nebulously.
I think, Sam, what you're suggesting is actually, it's very interesting to me because that's very similar to how the birthrights work in this game.
Oh, interesting. So I tell me about the birthrights, because I've read the game, but I've not played this one, so I'm much less familiar with the birthrights.
Yeah, so I've played it a couple times with Luke and other friends, and the way that birthrights work in this game is they kind of are what you're saying. It's each playbook or archetype has four birthrights that are things that god is a god of, usually, or things that are relevant to that. For example, we've been talking about Hades a lot. Hades' birthrights are authority, death, desperation, and despair. And the prompt that is in each playbook says, whenever someone interacts with your birthrights, you may suggest a ruinous action they could take. Should they accept, award them one coin. So yeah, it's not giving them one of yours, but how this often comes into play is a scene that you are not a part of, you are tuned into because you're listening for your birthrights and you're listening to say, that sounds like this thing that is in my wheelhouse. What if you did this awful, awful thing? And then you get a coin for it. So I think that is very compelling.
It also like really highlights the like God side of the theming here. Like Hades totally has domain over authority, death, desperation, and despair. And in some ways, like almost feels like a little mini setting element, right? For whoever's playing as Hades, that you can do a little GMing when it comes to authority, death, desperation, and despair.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. And I do think it sort of fills in, yeah, that gap of, I kind of forget what other people's lores are. My solution for that when I'm writing lores is often, and I do this with moves as well, is how can I write things that you're already gonna do based on the vibe of the playbook that you're picking? Because I do think it's, you have to kind of be listening for your own lores. Like you have to, for Hades, it would be like, if someone starts to make a deal with you, you can go, oh, you get a coin because we just did this thing. But it should be things that are kind of naturally happening.
I'm thinking about the birthrights here more. Like one of the things that I really love the most about lures is how specific they are. Like you can really imagine the scene of most lures, right? Especially I think the well-written ones. And the birthright ones are much more open-ended, and maybe you're just like paying a little cost there to like make that kind of mechanic run, or you know, you gain some when you make something more open-ended like that, it's then, it gives you as the player more room to come in and play, right? But it's so hard to come up with like good specifics, you know? like that's one of the things I love about lures, is it's like, yes, I can build a whole session around, oh no, I'm in debt to Hades, right? Like,
yeah, for sure. And the birthrights thing, because they're so vague, is also becomes really interesting in play, because there's something so fun about being on the receiving end of someone going, hey, this sounds like this thing. Do you want to do this awful thing about it? And I, in play of this game, have had scenes where I've been being prompted by multiple other people within like the same line of dialogue of like, this all sounds like this, like something bad is about to happen to you. And it's really, really interesting for a game like this that again is so forged in creating this tragedy. It also makes it very compelling to go, hey, here's a chance to get some leverage, especially because the moves in this game are also a little bit different. There's not a strong, normal, and weak moves. You have to spend a coin to take any of your five moves, and there's no other way to gain them other than interacting with lores and birthrights and things of that nature, which also kind of puts it in a different framing than a lot of other usages of lores and mechanic, like similar mechanics.
Yeah, that feels like you'd have a lot more, oh no, how do I get coins? I guess I better pick up everyone else's sheet and find out. Okay, so we've been talking about birthrights a little bit. This game also has duties. What's the deal with duties?
Sure. Duties. You start with as many coins as duties you have. It's usually 2 to 3. You lose all coin anytime you break a duty, and you ask the table how fate punishes you. I really, really like that the only way you can gain coins is by interacting with other people's lures. You're losing coins all the time in this game, unless you are somehow interacting with people's lures more than you're making moves, which is just sort of not possible. And I really, really like the operating at a deficit there, especially because this game is tragic. Yeah, so like for, let me look at Hades, since we've been talking about Hades the most. Hades' duties are give a job to anyone who asks, enforce each contract to the letter, and keep the factory running no matter what. There's those Hades ones, and then Persephone's are answer whenever your patron calls and put your freedom first. And I think that in order for the game to be interesting, you have to be breaking duties. I like the degree to which you're always operating at a deficit a lot.
Yeah, I feel like people have to be threatening you with the good time of breaking your duties, at least, right? Like, I feel like the juice of duties is like, am I going to break this? Like, please, someone put me in a situation where, like, I have to decide whether or not to break my duties. They are in that way, like, anti-lures. If someone wants to fuck around with you, they can, like, look at your duties and, like, come mess with you, right?
This game is so interesting because I mentioned that there's not strong moves and weak moves, but it kind of takes lures and then makes them into strong moves and weak moves. And also a secret third thing. Like, because there's the duties that we're talking about, and the thing of like threatening people with a good time has again in play absolutely happened to me with in reference to other people's birthrights, where they have suggested an action to me and it's like, I will get a coin for doing this, but also it's breaking one of my duties, so I'm gonna lose all my coins by doing it. Like, it's an interesting way of sort of twisting this concept of lures and moves and framing them a little bit differently in a way that makes them a little bit more actionable. There's also a failing that every book playbook has that is, it is similar to a weak move in that you are doing something bad and you get a coin from doing it. All of the like quote unquote moves in each playbook are just kind of reframings of lores.
Yeah, because the failings, they're just weak moves, right? It's like when you do a thing, but it's always you're doing a thing to a person. It's really relationship based in the way that lures are, and that I think is like the biggest strength of lures.
Yeah, a lot of really strong bait for interacting with people in ways that are going to harm both of you.
I'm thinking about my favorite way to play Belonging Outside Belonging games is to try to play for the high score and like get as many tokens as I possibly can. And my high score in Dream Askew is something like 8 tokens, which I was very proud of. And I feel like that would be extra hard to do in this game because you're relying so much on other people's birthrights to come give you coins. You gotta like set yourself up. You gotta like play with smart people who can really fuck you up in order to get those coins.
Hi, my name is Robin.
And my name is Dylan.
Do you like Choices Matter video games?
If so, we started this podcast, Dorkspawn, so that I could show my best friend my favorite RPG series of all time, Dragon Age.
And now that I've played it, we want to share more of these choice-heavy games with each other.
Right now, Robin is showing me Mass Effect, which I have never played before.
And we are going to continue playing through these games together and discussing them book club style as we go.
You can join our Discord and play along with us, and tune into Dorkspawn every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode of Dice Exploder is sponsored by Hero Forge. Hero Forge offers fully customizable tabletop miniatures with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from, all within your browser. And these minis come in a variety of materials, including bronze, color standees, and color plastic options, or download model files for your minis and 3D print their unique designs right in your own home. Hero Forge also has custom printed dice where they'll stick your favorite mini floating inside a die or put that mini on a keychain. Hero Forge custom acrylic keychains are printed at the same scale as the rest of Hero Forge minis and arrive already attached to a high quality zinc alloy lobster clasp so you can take your favorite character wherever you go. Hero Forge is constantly expanding its catalog of customization options, adding new parts every week, so check back in and see what you've missed. Visit heroforge.com to start designing your custom miniature and dice today. This episode of Dice Exploder is brought to you by Die Meta Dungeon. Die Meta Dungeon is a campaign-length, dungeon-based adventure for the Die RPG that is also a crawl through 60 years of tabletop RPG history. In Die Meta Dungeon, your characters will enter a massive dungeon that grows deeper and more dangerous as more people succumb to the honeyed allure of role-playing games. Dungeon crawl your way through every era of gaming, from the 1970s to the present day, one decade per dungeon level. Survive to the end, and you might learn something. For the first time in the Die RPG, player characters will get to return to the real world between levels of the dungeon, trying to juggle their real-life problems, and maybe even apply some of the important things they've learned about themselves in the dungeon, before being drawn inexorably back into the meta dungeon. It's a classic fantasy mega dungeon campaign with a postmodern twist, and at least 6 months of sessions baked into it. Die Meta Dungeon is on BackerKit through April 2026. This episode of Dice Exploder is brought to you by Orbital Blues Month. 1 month, 6 creators, an entire outlaw galaxy to explore. Orbital Blues is an RPG of sad space cowboys where your crew of desperate and downtrodden outlaws travel across a music-infused space western universe filled with retro-future technology plagued by heartbreak and the haunting shadow of the blues. And through the end of April on BackerKit, 6 creators are all running projects that expand the Orbital Blues universe. Check out Outlaws and Corporations from Soul Muppet Publishing, a book filled with NPCs, adventures, and setting inspiration. Formula Infinity from Plus One EXP, a high-octane space racing adventure complete with bespoke mechanics for racing. Or A Fistful of Stars from Stations, an interwoven series of adventures set on an interstellar train line. Or any of 3 other projects. Each project also comes with a soundtrack from Behold, which you're listening to part of right now, and which you can get as a limited edition cassette tape when you back multiple projects. Orbital Blues Month, through the end of April, on BackerKit. Check it out. This is something else I was thinking about kind of at large with lures, is like how you could do lures without attaching coins or tokens, right? Like you could just say like, hey, here's a cool relationship thing about this playbook, like come at me. But when you attach the token, then like people are like, ooh, shiny, like let's try to get the high score, like I was just fucking talking about, right? Like, and I think that that is, I'm sure someone's written a PhD thesis on incentives of this kind, right? Like they are powerful, but it is interesting to me that they are also not necessary if I'm playing at a table with friends who are all just like, no, the incentive for us is fuck each other up. Like, I don't need tokens to just go fuck up my friends, right?
Yeah, I think that's also the sort of crowd that this game draws in too, because especially like Birthrights, you are not getting anything from them other than fucking your friend up. They're getting something if they take it, but you don't lose anything by not taking it.
Yeah, the incentive of using a birthright is, wouldn't it be funny if your character got into even more trouble in this particular way?
Exactly.
How much in playing Belonging Outside Belonging games with lures have y'all done the thing of like looking at your sheet, seeing your lure, and then like approaching someone else to be like, do you want to be in my debt now? Like of like trying to flip the action of the lure to like really go up and put it in other people's face, you know? Because I do feel like that's sort of how they end up most working in practice for me, because of that thing we were talking about earlier with like, I can't see what's on other people's sheets.
It's not something I've done, but I it feels like a pro strat I should start using. I just wish that there was a way to see other people's lures all the time so that you wouldn't have to be the first to initiate for your own lore.
I think what I often do is, as we're going around and doing character creation, I take note of what other people's lures are so that I can kind of be more proactive in helping them use them.
It does make me want to like, okay, if I'm playing this game on Google Slides or whatever, I just want a whole slide that is a list of everyone's lures so I can just go camp there and like look at it, right?
Yeah, for sure. I also think that my proclivity towards helping other people do more things definitely is what informs that. I even in games where this is not a role I can take, I am a support player.
All right, any last words or takeaways about lures here?
I think there's also something to be said about how social these games are, and or like how important the social relationships that characters have to each other are, and how social relationships are never going to be smooth. Like, you kind of have to be a little bit clunky and being like, hey, do you want to take this moment to be weird and vulnerable with me? And maybe you'll get a coin about it or a token about it. Like, there's something a little bit clunky about that that is kind of, I think that is kind of fun in a social, messy relationship game.
There's, you know, as much as I was complaining about, like, in practice, I think, like, people don't use lures because they don't remember to like pick up other people's character sheets. It's kind of cool to like have an incentive to just grab someone else's character sheet and take a look at it, right? And like while you're there, maybe you'll see something else that's neat, you know? Like I love putting mechanical attention onto relationships like this. Like I would really love to see designers like trying other shit out that just sort of lives in the space between characters, like lives in relationships rather than living like on one playbook and what I can do with this playbook. What's my cool superpower ability, right? Like it's just so much less interesting to me than like, what is the nature of my relationship to my weird friend, you know?
Yeah, that is so at the core of like everything that I write and design. I'm so like intrigued by the relationships between people, and my like pipe dream game is a game that is as socially crunchy as a lot of games are combat crunchy. It's so intriguing to me.
It's also interesting that this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately, of like, does more crunch pull more focus to that thing, or does more crunch, this, oh god, we can't start this, I refuse to do rules allied on this podcast. But like, I don't know, like does bringing a lot of crunch to relationships make them feel less relationshipy because now they feel mechanical, you know, they feel crunchy as opposed to the like weird freeform flowing thing that is constantly negotiating relationships.
But then also, what can you do with making relationships feel more mechanical and like something you have to really manage?
Yeah, totally. Totally. Everyone else, go out and design your games about relationships so that we can play them. And then, yeah.
And then send them to me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks for coming on Dice Exploder, y'all. This was great having you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks again to Barclay and B for being here. You can listen to their show, Tabletop Book Club, wherever podcasts are sold. Thanks to everyone who supports Dice Exploder on Patreon. As always, you can find me on Blue Sky at Dice Exploder, and you can find my games at sdunnewall.itch.io. Our logo was designed by Sporgery, our theme song is Sunset Bridge by Purely Gray, and our ad music is Lily Pants by my boy, Travis Tesmer. This episode was edited by M. Acosta. Thank you, M. And thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time.